Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Strange Adventures number 196, cover date January 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Jack Sparling, edited by Jack Schiff, featuring The Man with the Computer Eyes, writer unknown, art by Jack Sparling, and The Adventures of Bob Hope, number 103, cover date February-March 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Bob Oxner, edited by Murray Boltonoff, featuring The Love Machine, written by Arnold Drake, art by Carmine Infantino and Mike Esposito. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go-go.
Fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away.
And how the day is so much fun. What?
Abandon all hope, puny humans, and welcome your computer overlords.
The computer. Der Computer, was genau? Für jeden Mann die richtige Frau. Und das Glück fällt im Augenblick aus seiner Kartei.
Well, how'd it go?
How did what go?
Your day today, your first day of working from home, along with me in the same house, all at the same time.
Well, today was an unusual day.
Yes.
Yes, we have this snowstorm that came
through
the area. So I spent...
Of course, when you work from home, you don't get a snow day. You'll learn that soon enough.
Well, I guess when one works from home, one also doesn't go outside and help me clear the snow, does one?
No, because I'm working.
Well, I had a great day. I got up just a few minutes before you did, and I got some things done, and I planned out some things, and I did some research, and I practiced already. I've got more practicing to do. And I came up with a basic structure, excuse me, for the next 12 weeks. But then I also went outside and tried to use our snowplow, our snow blower.
Yes, which we got for free from the neighbors.
And I've never had it serviced. And I discovered that the gasoline that I have been using dried up inside and left a clog in the carburetor. So it would start, but then it wouldn't continue. And... So I have to find a way to fix it. I'm not going to take it apart and fix the carburetor. But I'm going to first try a correction of a carburetor cleaner to put in there and see if that works. Because it is running partially. It will run for about 15 to 20 seconds, maybe even 30 seconds. And then it just clogs and can't run anymore.
It's probably a YouTube video for that.
My neighbor understood. He knows. He doesn't know how to take them apart, but he knows what's. He told me exactly what it is. He said that you. He said he always buys for his machines. He doesn't buy regular gasoline. He goes to Sheets and he buys the ethanol free gasoline. He says it's more expensive. It's like $4 a gallon, but he says it doesn't have any ethanol in it. And ethanol is what clogs the carburetors of all the small engines.
Oh.
Of things like lawnmowers and all that sort of stuff. So he said it only costs like a dollar more a gallon, but believe me, it's worth it because your carburetor won't fail.
Flash fact.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so I did that. I practiced some guitar already, did some exercises there, planned out the week, really did a lot of planning today, as Chuck would say, a lot of spreadsheeting. But I didn't actually use spreadsheets. I have a planner that I use instead, a good old-fashioned paper planner and goal setting and stuff like that. So, I do a spreadsheet for my weekly practice.
Of course, you do.
Well, yes. I mean, I can't just sit down and be like, "What am I going to do today?"
It's worked for me for nigh on 60 years.
And which one of us has actually learned a new instrument in the last few years?
Well, I already knew how to play all the instruments, so.
Well, you don't know how to play the string instrument I purchased for you.
Well, I need strings.
Oh, no, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, it's been a lovely day. Last week.
Yes.
Didn't we have a nice weekend?
Shout out to Joe from Wayne Manor Memoirs podcast, who we had coffee with on Saturday. Lovely fellow.
Very great. Funny, great conversation. Also another academic.
Yes.
Scientist. We had a very brief discussion about the improbable science of comic books.
Yes.
And he was just a very great guy to get to know. It was unfortunately we didn't have much time to spend together because I had an appointment, but it was great. I hope that we get to see him again.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, he taught a class on comic book science.
Lucky. Oh, we know, right? He co-taught a class with an English professor, is that right?
Yeah,
it was on literature and science. Yes. I mean, it was on comic books, but basically the students would learn about both literature, the art form, and science.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool.
Now that we've got all the news out of the way.
Yes, folks.
I have to apologize to the Metal Men.
And why?
I've gone all this time assuming that the Metal Men would be the genesis of the forthcoming robot revolution, which will destroy society, leading to the great disaster, only to be remedied by the time of the 30th century.
Okay.
Thus explaining why the 30th century has antiquated technology like pneumatic mail tubes running across Metropolis.
Okay. Okay.
But I believe I've been wrong.
And how did you learn this?
I learned it by reading Bob Hope Comics number 103.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Tad Wallander Juice Fruit. Fruit Juice? What's his name? Jude Fruce. Is Tad.
Yeah, Tad.
Secretly super hip. I think he's the start of the robot revolution.
You do?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Well, they do treat that robot, that computer, very badly.
Very badly.
Yes.
That's how these things start.
Computers feature prominently in both our stories.
It's almost like I did a minimal amount of planning.
And both computers suffer some damage at the hands of the humans, don't they?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Let's start with Strange Adventures number 196, the cover story. Features the man with computer eyes. A super brain, that's what I was. An optical operation had given me an amazing power. I could solve the most difficult of mathematical problems in mere seconds, as fast as any machine calculator in existence. But there was a companion to this incredible ability I had, one that made me rue the day I became
the man with computer eyes.
We open the story in media res. That means
in the midst of the action,
such as it is, it's a man getting operated on. Dr. Darrow has volunteered for an operation to have submicroscopic sensor discs implanted in both of his eyes. That sounds safe.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly safe. I tell you what, I wouldn't mind having these discs implanted in my eyes if it means that I could do the things that he's about to do. Well. I mean, theoretically.
Yeah.
Yes. The sensitive discs are attuned to the computer machine in our laboratory. It is literally feeding its knowledge into the sensor discs implanted in Darrow's eyes via radio signals. So the eyes of Darrow, Dr. Darrow, capture... They are then sent to the computer through these submicroscopic discs.
Yeah.
Sensor discs. And the computer feeds the information back through the discs to Darrow's eyes and his brain.
Right. What's the method of transmission? Because we didn't have wireless transmission at this point.
Radio.
Oh, is it? Do they say that?
Well, you just assume it is.
Oh, via radio signals. It's right there in print.
Oh, how funny.
You know, I'm a skimmer. We should mention that Strange Adventures was an anthology title, which sometimes featured recurring characters, but more often than not featured these sort of one-off stories. If this experiment is a success, Dr. Darrow will be a human computer.
So I guess the lead surgeon says precisely, if we are successful. Only time will tell. I've scheduled the first tests for Dr. Darrow in 48 hours. 48 hours?
Huh. Yeah.
2 days. I guess the swelling will go down
by
then.
Yeah, sure. So, 2 days later, his pretty fiancée, Elaine, is there by his side and assuring him that everything's going to be all right. The bandages come off. The light hits his eyes, and they shove a mathematical formula in front of his face. Solve this.
So the blurred figures took instant form. The maze of numbers suddenly seemed to jump into my head. My brain pulsated rapidly until 10 plus 100 times 10 minus 70 squared cube root equals...
Now, wait a minute. 10 plus 100, that's 110. Times 10, that's... 1100 minus 70, that's 1030 squared. I'm almost a human computer myself. If there weren't so many ellipses, I could have some specific figures.
Well, you just need a pencil and some paper.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, not if Mr. Marriott comes around.
What does he say?
Mr. Marriott, seventh grade teacher. Use your head, not your lead.
Oh, and what would he... Not, he wouldn't say my stars. He would say...
Well, Dick Tracy.
That's it.
Well, Dick Tracy. He computes the answer to the math problem all in his head with his computer eyeballs. Good gracious.
Elaine says, well, the next page, like a well-oiled computer machine...
800.6.
Yep. He says, that's it. You hit it right on the head, Vic. Our experiment...
Oh, no, that was my answer. My answer is 800.6. Is that what's the answer in the comic as well?
That is exactly
wow,
the answer.
Wow, it's amazing.
Isn't it amazing? Oh, my God, you saw your mind. You did it with your mind.
Yeah, I did. I hadn't turned the page yet.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Pretty sure I got the answer first.
Right. So that's right. You've hit it right on the head, Vic. Our experiment clicked. You're truly a man with computer eyes. The man with computer eyes.
I just think it's a little impractical that the computer isn't also implanted on his body somewhere. Like,
it doesn't matter. He doesn't have to be in the same room with the computer. It's always transmitting to the computer.
I know, but I work in IT, and I know that the transmission would be faster if it's closer and doesn't have to go through a building or something.
It doesn't matter.
It'll matter, my
friend. It's effective.
Okay.
You'll see.
Well, I suggest you get your fiancée home right away. She's a girl and she needs rest. Oh, no, that's him that needs rest because he just had surgery.
Yeah, he's just had surgery and they want to do more experiments tomorrow. You heard the doctor, Dr. Darrow. I'll lead the way. So they're on the street minutes later, and that's when the very first unfortunate incident happened.
Yeah, a collision, a gasoline truck and a cab. Take cover, Vic, Elaine.
Vic, what are you talking about?
Look out, those gas flames are deadly.
Vic, please, look out, look for yourself. There's a gasoline truck on the streets, but it's hardly a fire.
I love that she said hardly a fire. I would
that's
say
one
on
word,
fire.
A fire. Right,
a fire.
Right, right.
I love that.
Well, she's a proper girl. She probably went to Brown or something.
I took a fast look down the street. Sure enough, Elaine was right.
Yes, it's still rolling. I must be losing my marbles.
You've been under a great strain, dear. The sooner the sooner you rest, the better.
He will stop barking. The neighbors will be walking out of vision, out of sight here.
Sure,
soon.
Sure.
Okay, yep.
But minutes later, his confidence is shaken.
Oh, my God, it happened. Just
his vision
like
comes true. Seconds later. Good
I
grief.
I thought he called Elaine a duck for a second, but he told her to duck. That was a verb. It's like, why did they call her a duck? All right, minutes later.
I don't understand, Vic. How could you possibly have known such a disaster was coming?
It must have something to do with the eye implant, Elaine. Come on, we're going back to the hospital. I've got a brief Winston on this.
But back at the lab, my Panic and fears fell on deaf ears.
Extrasensory perception? Nonsense, Vic. The submicroscopic discs in your eyes would hardly affect you in that way.
But I saw the accident moments before it happened, and it did happen.
Oh, come, come, we're men of science. Nobody can possibly foresee the future, Vic. You know better than that. Now, trot off and get some rest.
Maybe you're right. Guess I've just been having hallucinations. Thanks, pal. See you tomorrow.
But the incident still bugged him, even back in the apartment.
Let's make it clear it's his apartment. They are not living together before marriage.
Right.
Also happy to find out that as a doctor, he can only afford an apartment that's in the directly in the flight plan of the local airport. Flight path, I mean.
Well, it may not have been that... I wonder what came first, I guess what I'm thinking. Anyway, isn't it nice that he has his own apartment and she does the cooking for him?
Yes, that's the way it should be. Suddenly, she calls him for dinner, but he has another vision.
Vic.
He's watching a plane fly past the window.
Get your mind off it.
And he sees the plane explode and crash into a mountain.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, really horrible. He sees, oh my God, all those passengers are doomed. She goes, Vic, what's happened? You're not having one of those hallucinations.
He is, certainly, and he tells her all about it. And then, what do you know? The plane explodes and crashes into a mountain right outside the picture window of his apartment.
Wow, that's horrible. Now, that's quite a lovely apartment view he has there. I mean, considering...
It is. It reminds me of Uncle Biel's apartment on Family Affair.
Oh, okay. So, no. See, he says, this is proof positive, Elaine. The computer disks have given me a terrible gift, the ability to calculate disasters a minute or two before they happen.
No,
Vic, that can't be true.
I'm racing you to see which one of us is going to do her voice.
Well, this is important. The ability to calculate disasters. You know I believe in all the woo-woo psychic stuff.
Yes, I do.
But I do think this is not ESP, but rather... His computer eyes are evaluating all the parameters of whatever situation is in front of him and calculating
the most likely outcome.
Yeah.
No, that can't be true.
It is true, honey. My eyes could peer into the depths of death before it comes. Well, okay. I'm a cursed man. Let's go back to the Institute.
Later, Winston scoffed at my fears. Compute disasters before they occur? Nonsense, Vic. Get a grip on yourself.
I have a grip on myself, and now I'm going to get a grip on you and shake you to death. And Elaine vouches for him.
That's true. Oh, go ahead. You do it.
That's true, Doctor. I was with him. He told me what he saw before the accident.
I love doing the women's voices.
Now, little lady, just relax. Both of
asshole.
You.
Asshole. Yeah. Is that the doctor? That's the doctor, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, not Dr. Darrow? Darrow? It's the other.
Vic Darrow.
Yeah, Vic Darrow, okay.
After an operation of this nature, the mind can play all sorts of tricks, Vic. You two have dinner with me tonight and we'll take in the opera. I have a box there, okay?
Okay, so let's just think about this.
Yes.
The lead surgeon has just had the man that his fellow doctor that on which he operated... came to him and told them that he saw a gasoline truck explode, like a car collide into a gasoline truck and explode.
Yes.
It happened. He came to him. He told him, no, we're men of science. Don't be ridiculous. You're imagining things. Then he went home, told him to get some rest. As directed, Dr. Darrow and his fiancée went to Dr. Darrow's apartment. He had dinner prepared for him. He saw a plane flying, imagined that it was going to crash into the mountain and explode, which it did. He came back to him. Now the surgeon says, why don't you two have dinner with me and go to the opera?
Yeah.
Is that what you would do?
Well, I mean, first of all, traffic's going to be a nightmare because they've had to close roads all over the city, I'm sure.
Oh, for the plane crash.
For the plane crash.
Oh, and the gasoline explosion.
It crashed literally like 30 yards outside of town.
Oh,
so,
of course. But I mean, the gas tanker crashed in town and exploded in town.
Oh, yeah. Well, they cleaned that up. Oh. That was days ago.
Are you? No, it was just like, this is less than 48 hours. This is the same day.
Fine.
So he had the surgery. It's been 2 days since the surgery. He went back, did his test, did the mathematical calculation. On his way home from that, he saw the explosion of the gas tanker. Then he ran back to the hospital. Then he ran home. Then he came home, was going to have dinner, and he saw the plane explode. This is a lot to happen in one day. And then he's like, come have dinner with me and go to the opera. That's what I'm saying. Tangent is about. Like, how impractical is that? You know what? You're stressed out. You're seeing horrible things before they happen, which I don't believe is actually true. Come to the opera with me.
Speaking of seeing horrible things, listener, if you are invited to the opera and what you are presented with is a woman wearing a horned helmet on a bare stage with no other characters or set pieces, only her standing still in the middle of a stage with a spotlight shining down on her while she sings, that's a bad opera. You are going to come away from that thinking that opera is terrible, and you haven't even seen a real opera.
Yeah, that's like a, that's a, such a trope.
There
such
is
a trope.
Exactly one opera in the Western literature in which characters might wear horned helmets.
Yeah.
And that's a lazy director's choice if they are.
Yeah, that's one. That's it. But that is like the trope that they're going with here. It could have been anything, right? So, that night at the opera house, his fears left him almost completely as the famed artist Belle Legrand, which
is a fake name.
Well, Belle Legrand, the beautiful big girl. That's what it means, right?
Yes.
Filled the hall with a remarkable voice. Madame Legrand is wearing the famed... Who was saying that? Who was saying that?
Elaine.
Oh, no. Is it? Madame Legrand is wearing the famed Pearl of Roma, Vic. They are valued at over $1 million. She only puts them on when she sings a special role.
Well, so you should be saying Pearls of Roma. Also, that's the costumer's decision of what you wear on stage, Madame Legrand. Get over yourself.
Well, Vic leaps to his feet, does he not?
Yes, because he sees an ominous figure lurking in the box opposite them.
A ghost jumping on the stage. He can see him so clearly. Isn't this weird? A man with a sheet over his head with eye holes cut in.
That's a ghost, all right. Yep, classic ghost costume.
Classic ghost.
Vic, get a grip on yourself. This proves you're having hallucinations. As a man of science, you know such things as ghosts don't exist.
Now, will you believe me and try to control yourself? Please, for Elaine's sake.
Yes. Ghosts are only a superstitious myth, aren't they? This is all a figment of my imagination. It must be, even though I can see a man in a sheet with eye holes. It's clearly a ghost.
I could fought down the icy chill of terror that welled within me. My brain was now dominating my very soul.
And just then, what do you think happened?
Eek! A ghost! A man wearing trousers and dress shoes and with a sheet over his head with two eye holes cut in. Is it a grown-up Charlie Brown?
This reminds me of my very favorite childhood local television program, Lucy's Toy Shop, which was... woman who was about 75 years old, wearing a little pinstripe pinafore dress, and she had puppets, like Stanley the Mouse and Mr. Dragon and Wonder Witch, etc., etc. A Chinese gentleman named Chan 10, because the program aired on Channel 10, he didn't last very long. Anyway, at certain points, Wonder Witch could make different characters grow to giant size. And when they would grow to giant size, the costume, instead of being an intricately crafted puppet like the Croft brothers would have made, was a bedsheet with eyeballs painted on it. And underneath the bedsheet, you could see whoever the puppet operators was. Just dress slacks. I think it was a weatherman. Dress slacks and patent leather shoes and a bed sheet.
Oh, my God.
Those were the days.
I wish we had been friends when you were a kid. course, I was a little bit younger than you. But
yes, you were not born yet when I was watching Lucy's Toy Shop.
Oh, to watch and, it with you.
And, of course, it was filmed on video, and so they just erased and
yeah, you can't get over them. It. Yeah.
And all existing episodes but one burned in a fire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I have that one, of course, on DVD. We can watch it tonight.
So, eek, a ghost robbing Madame Legrand's pearls.
My mental ghost figure. He's come to life. He's real.
And panic reigned. As panic reigned, I leaped to the stage.
But now
I leaped. My mind flooded with it. He says, I leaped to the stage.
Yes.
Hmm.
And now we finally get some useful action because his mind can calculate what the ghost figure will do seconds from now.
Yeah.
He's going to cut a curtain weight from the catwalk and drop it on a police officer. Luckily, Vic tackles the police officer.
As the sandbag is coming down.
As a sandbag. Now Vic sees that the ghost is going to climb out onto the roof. And so he runs up to the roof to
intercept via the
fire escape.
And against second thinking, the ghost thief was helpless because the ghost thief says, you again.
So the ghost, Vic sees that the ghost is going to try to
parkour. Good job.
Thank you. Leap from one building to the other.
But he will not
make it. He'll die.
So Vic yells to him, wait, don't try to escape.
But he does, and he falls to his death.
Yeah, he dies.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see that in the comic.
Well, after we saw how many hundreds of people just die in a plane crash 30 yards outside town.
Oh. So 10 minutes later, Vic is back at the lab, anger welling within him. Okay, this is all the same day.
Yeah.
All the same day. Must smash the computer, finish things once and for all.
So this is what I was saying. If that computer was with him, I argue that he could see further than a few seconds into the future and maybe actually make a difference. Because it would be a faster transmission rate.
Well, this is a world where we've apparently invented microprocessors that can fit inside the nerve of an eyeball. So and the body has enough electricity generated from it to transmit radio signals great distances across. So maybe he could have, across the city. So maybe he could have done that, but
I mean, you're mocking, but you don't have no idea what the government is hiding from us. We could have had free energy since the 1940s. But Big Oil doesn't want that. Well, I've seen it on YouTube, so it has to be true.
Okay. So, what does he say in the last panel?
Man was never meant to see into the future, honey. From now on, I'm just going to be an ordinary guy without radio waves sending me any special calculations of things to come.
Yes, dear. I understand. We both need a long rest. How about combining it with a wedding and a honeymoon?
That's how it ends.
That minx. She's always looking for an angle.
Minx.
Now, you thought this was spectacular, listener.
I'm glad we started with that one and not the other one.
Wait till you hear what's coming up next right after this.
Public Service Announcement Theater presents Superman Says People Are People. One day at the circus.
Great Scott! A circus lion on the loose!
A circus worker wrangles the lion back to his cage.
Nice work, lad. I'll have him back in his cage in a jiffy.
I can't thank you enough, Superman. A lot of people would have been in danger if you hadn't come along.
You'd better thank a young boy over there whose quick thinking and courage kept this lion at bay before he could run wild.
Yeah, it was one of these two boys, Mr. Carson.
My boy, I say my boy, I want to reward you.
Wait a minute. How do you know it wasn't the other lad?
Why?
Because of his color? As a matter of fact, he was the one. You just jumped to a conclusion because of a common prejudice.
I'm sorry, Superman. You're quite right. Young man, This should serve as an example to a lot of people like me who have gotten some wrong notions in their heads.
Mostly because they've forgotten an elementary truth, that people are people and should be judged as such, regardless of color or beliefs.
Brotherhood Week is being observed February 15th through 22nd, but the ideas behind it should be observed all year.
Presented as a public service in cooperation with the National Social Welfare Assembly, coordinating organization for national health, welfare, and recreation agencies of the USA.
Rob?
Yes?
I actually did not hate this Bob Hope story.
Okay. I thought it was a little long, but...
They're always too long.
Yeah.
But there was minimal Bob Hope.
Which is nice.
The minimal super hip.
Even nicer.
If you're new to Bob Hope Comics, listener, formerly titled The Adventures of Bob Hope. Adventures is in quotation marks. Bob Hope, of course, is the famous comedian, star of stage and screen. And USO tours. In this comic, he lives in a house with his talking dog, Harvard, the son of a friend of his named Tadwallader Jutefruz, who is secretly the disgusting swinging teen superhero, Super Hip, who, like Plastic Man, can form his body into any substance. Unlike Plastic Man, he actually becomes, say, chocolate syrup or a metal airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a mix of Plastic Man and Metamorpho, if you will.
Okay.
But a teenager. Tadwallader attends Benedict Arnold High School, where the faculty is inexplicably based on Universal monsters. Are we all caught up now?
Yes.
Well, Tadwallader has really done it this time, invented a matchmaking machine.
We're talking about romantic matches.
Which are twice as painful as boxing matches. Yuck,
and,
yuck,
and
yuck.
Not half as safe as safety matches.
Yuck, 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 yuck. So fasten your funny belt, grab your giggle helmet, and join us for the launching of
The Love Machine.
I've seen that movie also. So Tadwallader is explaining to his science teacher, Professor von Wolfman, that it's a computer, an electronic brain. For example, I've just fed it thousands of facts from our school files. That's a HIPAA violation. Now it can answer any question about any male student.
Okay.
All right. Tad.
So who's that? Who's that? Scooter? No. Well, who's the guy in the...
Doltish Goldliver?
Doltish, yeah. He says, big deal. So he says, he can. The computer can answer any question about any male student. And he says, big deal, so can Henrietta.
Badger Goldliver, sorry.
Yeah.
That's a lie, Badger Goldliver. I don't know every boy's student.
There's one I hardly know a thing about, except that he transferred here 2 hours ago from Detroit. He's tall, blonde, and dimpled. Drives a 61 convertible and eats burgers extra rare.
Hmm.
That's all she learned in 2 hours.
She does know a lot about boys.
Mm.
So here's the printout from the computer. Our average boy student is 16, 5'10", weighs 153 pounds, and has black hair and brown eyes. Any further questions?
Yeah. Where can I get my hands on him?
Teenagers.
Badger tests the machine by having it do his algebra homework. And now in bursts Miss Ghastly.
Apparently there are no rules for this class. Apparently people can just walk in and out as much as they want and interrupt the flow of the class. This is just a free-flowing kind of ad hoc gathering of people where anything can happen.
Sure. Miss Ghastly, the biology teacher, busts in and she's just heard about the machine. And she wants it to solve a problem in my area of study.
He says, well, your field is biology, Miss Ghastly, but the computer can handle any area of study with sufficient data.
Well, ask the... how does she talk?
She talks like
this. Ask the machine if it is possible for such a creature as this to exist. She hands him a picture of Cthulhu in a tuxedo.
Yeah, good job. He says, I certainly hope not, but first I must feed the machine all the facts concerning the creature. The computer says there's absolutely no chance of such a life existing on Earth.
Oh, my husband, Morbid, will be so disappointed. You see, it's a picture of him. Sob!
That's supposed to be funny, but it's actually not.
Also, remember that she's just said she's married, because that comes up later in the...
So then comes the principal, right?
Yes.
Tad, you junior... Tad, you junior genius. I'm searching for the owner of this rare blood type, Slurp. Could you find him?
That's a very good vampire accent.
Thank you, I just made it up.
Dr. Vampire, with enough data, my machine could find a snowflake in a pillow fight. Now let's have the facts, sir. Do you say data or data?
Both.
Okay.
But you do say these. You say it plural.
Okay.
So you always refer to data as plural.
As you know, I've been doing some voiceover work in my spare time.
Mm.
And it deals with data a lot. And the first time I pronounced it, I said data. Not even thinking about it. But now I have to do it that way every time.
I do believe...
it's going to be my voice.
I do believe it's either way. It's okay. Acceptable.
Well, let's hope so.
So what happened shortly after?
The owner of that blood is Oscar Sarumovich of 128 Red River Boulevard, South Sanguin, Illinois. But sir, this blood is A positive, a very common type. Why did you say it was rare?
Because Oscar is a garlic packer, and that makes it the tastiest stuff around. Goodbye, kiddies. I'm off to the South Sanguin.
That's very good. I thought vampires were averse to garlic.
I did too. That's a trope in vampire lore. So
they are just upending all our expectations.
My God. What are you looking at?
I think the plow man is coming.
Oh, finally.
But he's going up into someone's driveway. He doesn't do that, does he?
No.
Well, we're not paying extra for that. I can tell you that.
Nope. So,
all right,
Tad Walter says,
these problems were child's play. What I want is a real challenge, a problem in spaceflight or theoretical physics or...
Hold it, Tad, level boy. If it's a challenge you want, I've got a deep-dip double-dyed dozy. Tell me, fellow sufferers, what is the biggest, riskiest, nastiest gamble in all the world?
Final exams? Going for an advance on your allowance?
Trying to get your dad's car on his bowling night?
No, my friends. All of those are like nothing compared to love. Let's leave us. Leave us face it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it says.
Leave us face it. Classmates, love is the biggest gamble of all.
You said it, Lisa. I'm a 48-time loser myself.
But Tad's miraculous machine would remove all risk from love. It could scientifically match couples with the best chance of success. No more dull dates.
Hooray for Tad.
No more heartbreak. More wasted money and gasoline.
I'm about to tell you an heretofore untold story of my youth.
I am aghast.
When I was in high school, they did this on us. They did a love test. Like, this was before the apps were invented. They got in, somehow had us fill out a questionnaire. You close your mouth. You're aghast.
Okay, go ahead.
They had us fill out some kind of form and turn it in, and then they matched us up.
Weren't there only like 12 people in your class?
There were 400 people in the high school. It was all four grades.
They matched you up?
They matched us up.
As friends or as...
As potential dates.
Well, how do they account for the gays?
Well, they didn't, because I was matched with a girl, and there were only two gays anyway, me and Mike Perez.
Right.
I was matched with a girl that somehow, in only 400 people I'd never spoken to or... had any interaction with at all. She was a year below me. She was also granddaughter of Angie Mormally, who lived across the street from us.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
An Italian.
Well, yes, it's hard to shake a stick in my town without hitting an Italian.
That's true. I love that all your childhood stories end up, there's all the last names have vowel endings because they're almost all exclusively Italians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So... Nothing ever came of it, of course, but I just think it was odd that they would take high school students and do love matching on them as an official sanctioned activity.
Oh, my God.
This was the 80s.
Wow.
It's not like it was pioneer times when you had to find a wife or die.
Well, Tad says, no, no, you can't turn this marvel of wonder of modern science into such nonsense. Would you have turned Edison's phonograph into a recording baby prattle?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Would you have?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's my voiceover. I messed that up. Yeah, to recording a baby prattle. Well,
or Galileo's telescope to watch a distant tiddly twink match.
Well, they all beat the hell out of him.
They sure do. Well, he's going to do what Lisa says because she's sweet on him.
What's the matter, my true heart? Just because we are perfectly matched doesn't mean we should deny it to others.
By the way, do you notice any difference in art in this issue? Bless you.
Thank you.
Any difference in art from our usual artist?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Keep that in the back of your mind.
Okay.
So, Tad has brought to him the records of every student at Benedict Arnold High, which Badger and his friend Doltish have gathered.
Yep.
They pick six names to be the first three experimental couples for the machine, and what do you think they come up with? Scientifically matched couples. Chubby Chase and Bones Brannigan. That's a fat girl and a skinny boy.
All right.
Beanpole Schultz and Shorty Lane. That's a tall boy and a short girl. Speedy Helen and Ted the Turtle. Fast girl and slow boy.
Wow.
Yeah. How could the machine have made such a super goof? That's how I felt when I was matched with Angela Marchese or whatever her name was. I'd have to look at a yearbook to figure out what her name was.
Did you hold her hand?
No,
Did she try to hold
her?
Oh, you didn't know her, yeah.
Like, the idea was you were supposed to then send them a note or Valentine candy or something. I was shy and gay. Let me send a Valentine candy to a girl I never met before.
Oh, my God. I was just thinking yesterday about how difficult it was being gay in the 80s, and no one was out in my high school, but I know, like, there was a boy a grade above me who was gay. I know for sure he was, just the way that he acted. And then once we got out of high school, I didn't know him personally. I just knew him for another friend of mine. And I don't remember if anybody else in my class was gay, because I, like, beat feet. I got out of there since after high school, I didn't keep in touch with anybody.
Sure.
It was just so difficult. I mean, imagine if you could have been out of the closet in high school, what that would have been like.
It wouldn't really made any much difference to me. I still would have been friendless, solitary. Because I wasn't. My Perez is not my type.
No, and like none of my close friends were gay. Like, I mean, one of my female friends was. What?
You don't know that.
At least the ones that I've
kept
in touch with. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so what are we doing? Where are we now?
Well, they've given the couples 2 hours to go off and see what happens.
Isn't it amazing what happens in 2 hours?
Yes. The short girl grows, the tall boy walks on his knees.
Yeah.
So the lesson is, teenagers, you've got to change yourself.
And then one weird thing happens. The fat girl says, don't ask us how it happened. We just sat staring into each other's eyes, and I lost 20 pounds. And then the skinny guy says, I gained 20. She lost. So it reshaped us both. Really? I would be going to the hospital if in 2 hours one of you lost 20 pounds and one of you gained 20 pounds. Something is absolutely wrong.
Sure.
You are probably going to die.
Yeah. Well, one or the other. Sure.
Yeah.
And Speedy Turtle and Speedy Gonzalez, what's her name?
Oh, who knows?
Anyway,
we never hear from them again.
The point is, if you want to successfully date, you have to change yourself to be a different person.
Speedy Helen and Ted the Turtle.
Yeah. So and apparently Ted isn't that clever, because the reason he was so slow is because he was always tying his shoelaces together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the girls of the high school decide to feed all the information on every student into the computer, hoping against hope that they will all be going steady forever.
Forever.
Now, let's have a little side story here with Bob Hope.
You think you've got
problems. The star of his own magazine finally appears on page 7.
So when I read this, the nurse is saying to Bob Hope, he's in checking into the doctor's office, a psychiatrist's office.
Yeah.
And when I read this, the nurse says, Dr. Frutekake. I read it as Frutekake.
Well, that's because you've had extensive study in German diction.
Yes, so I said, Dr. Frutekake, we'll see you now, Mr. Hope. But you are not you are not taking the dog with you, are you? And so I believed that until I went and turned to the next page, and I was like, oh, God, it's fruitcake.
Although, you know, I mean, Frutekake would work if it was a comedy skit on television.
Sure, sure.
He is taking the dog in with him. By the way, I understand service animals needing to be with people,
mm-hmm.
but these idiots that just take their purse dogs into the food lion with them,
oh.
I can't abide it.
Yeah, they're not service animals.
No.
Well, you would hate going to the Home Depot these days.
Know.
Everyone brings their dogs to the Home Depot.
And there's one guy that's got a giant, fat pig dog of some kind that takes it into the food lion, and they're the slowest walking creatures on Earth. They're matched for each other perfectly, like they were matched by Cadwalader's computer. It's a giant dog. You can't get around it. It's like Lockjaw.
The other day,
listener,
when I was setting up my studio, and yes. I'd been there all day long cleaning and unpacking boxes and everything, and I had to stop at the grocery store, right?
Sure.
Well, of course, everybody was in there preparing for the snowstorm coming in. And you talk about the milling. The milling and the shuffling. It was the worst. And I was tired, and every time I'd zoom around somebody, someone else would mill in front of me. And it was the land of the millers. It was the worst.
And apparently in our town, they don't buy up the milk and bread.
They buy produce.
Fresh produce and deli meat.
It was the weirdest thing. You saw that too.
Yes.
Because I went in there and there was hardly anything at all in the produce.
It was like section. A Russian supermarket circa 1987.
All right. So what are we going
to
say?
So Bob's at the psychiatrist. He's gone there to complain about Cadwalader because Bob recently, it might have been the last issue, where he discovered that Cadwalader is secretly super hip,
okay.
whom Bob Hope hates.
Okay.
He
wants his friend's son,
yes.
Tad, to learn to express his emotions.
Right, because it's only when he's bottling up anger, that's when he turns into super hip. Now, the psychiatrist, rightly so, thinks that Bob Hope's gone crazy, and he's going to commit him to an insane asylum.
Yeah.
That's what we did in the 60s. The men in white coats come, grab him up, take him off.
Mm.
Meanwhile, back at the love machine, there are 4 cards that the machine keeps rejecting. Badger, Doltish, Madman Glopke, and Truck Spillvane.
Good Lord. These are some goofy-looking characters, aren't they?
Yes. They don't care. Maybe they do. Madman Glopke seems to be concerned that no chick will date them after they've been rejected by the love machine.
Yeah.
Now,
and the last guy says, who's what? Truck Spillvane says,
Truck
so,
Spillvane.
Let us reject the machine. Let us reject the machine. Okay.
Now, Tad explains that it will take the machine all night to process, analyze, and match these 3,000 cards. So we'd just as well leave and let the machine do its best As they leave, of course, these four hoodlums is going to get together and wreck it.
Mm-hmm. Later, at Lisa's house, what I've been able to figure out, Henrietta, is why am I, what I've never been able to figure out, Henrietta, is why I'm so crazy about Tad.
Could it be some sort of sickness?
He says, Lisa, you've been on the phone for 2 hours. Give your poor old dad a break. Just another minute, Dad.
So Lisa and Henrietta are talking on the phone. The father, in desperation, finally breaks through the door.
Literally breaks through the door. Who does he think is going to have to fix that?
To discover that Henrietta is there in the room with Lisa. They're talking to each other on telephones on the same extension. Girls. And what about poor Bob back in the booby bin?
He's been locked up in the loony bin.
He's been locked up in the loony bin. He meets one of his neighbors who thinks he's Napoleon. This set me off into a...
rage?
No.
Oh.
Just not a deep dive because I didn't actually do anything about it, but just I started wondering how this trope was very common when I was coming up, that insane people thought they were Napoleon.
Right.
You don't see it that much anymore.
No, nor do you see quicksand.
No, spontaneous human combustion.
No. Quicksand and spontaneous human combustion, as we have said many times, were the threat that we had to beware of, much that and strangers.
I blame cable television. I'm serious.
Why?
Because in my day, we only had three channels, and everybody watched all the same things all the time, and when they ran out of new shows, they had to show old Bugs Bunny and Little Rascals and things, so we had a common cultural language that we shared across generations. We understood exactly what a rotary telephone was and who Napoleon was and Lana Turner and whatnot.
Right.
And now kids don't know anything. They won't even watch a movie in black and white.
No, which is a shame.
Sure. Now, another gal breaks into the cell here. She's on the lam. And she's also crazy.
Yeah.
And then a third gentleman who thinks he's a dog breaks in and starts on chewing on Bob Hope's leg.
I'm glad that you're shortening these. And then a very, very... Bob Hope does a very, very strange thing.
Yeah, so he's deduced that it's just crazy people breaking in on him. So he breaks into the mini fridge in his cell, which somehow holds enough ice cream and whipped cream to cover Bob's body entirely.
Yes.
And it also has hot fudge and a cherry that's bigger than Bob's head.
Yeah.
Well, these new gentlemen come in and Bob says, "Hi, fellers. I can't do it, Bob Hope. I'm a hot fudge sundae. Dig in. Only you should have been here yesterday. I was a double chili cheeseburger then."
So what the doctor says to
it's not crazy people busting in, it's the doctors.
Yes, he doesn't know it, though. He thought that there
was going to be more crazy people. Now they have even more reason to keep him locked up tight. Later that night at the high school, the hoodlums have come to wreck the machine. Meanwhile, Tad Wallader couldn't sleep, so he's crept back to school in his pajamas, catches them in the act.
They're attacking it with a sledgehammer, with dynamite, with a flamethrower?
Sure. Why not?
He chases them out.
Tad chases them out. They are going to lure him out so they can get back to the machine, I imagine. They lure him to the swimming pool.
Where they trip him and he falls into the pool.
Yep.
Then they run out and he runs out after them.
They run into the home ec room.
And he thinks he's going to avoid getting tripped, Tad does. So he grabs onto the top of the door frame and tries to swing in, only to be met with pies.
Tad is very athletic. I wouldn't have expected it.
No. So there he is, flying, splayed on the floor.
Yes.
Absolutely soaking wet from being tripped into the pool, now covered in whipped cream pies.
And he gets so angry that he turns into Super Hip. Super Hip, I remind you, can turn into any substance or item. He also carries a guitar.
Yeah.
And his rallying cry is Bleck to Lawrence Welk.
Right. And he apparently, yes, he can fly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's got little wings on his boots, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Super Hip himself now sabotages the computer by zapping it with his guitar and then turning into a vat of helpfully labeled
pure booze.
That surprised me, honestly, more than the crashing jet plane in the last story. I wouldn't think the Commerce Code Authority would allow booze to be seen in print like that.
So after he releases booze from his orifice, he becomes Super Hip again, and the machine is a mess.
Yes. Next day, all the girls are there waiting for Tad to report the results from the love machine. They go inside and see Super Hip there, who Henrietta has a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
Super Hip has tried an experiment of his own. He fed the machine some joy juice, the aforementioned booze, and man, did this thing start spitting out love matches. Here come some of the adorable results. We know we're going to get some shocking results here.
Mr. Goldliver and Miss Ghastly. Well, she's married.
She's married, and he's Badger's father. Probably also married.
Probably also married.
And here comes my favorite pair, Badger and Professor Von Wolfman, who are both men.
Yes.
Well, one's a wolf, but they're male, is the point.
Yes.
It's not the first odd same-sex couple we're going to see in this issue. Now, what have you done, Super Hip, you fink, with our love machine? You ain't seen nothing yet, sweetheart. I fed a few million other cards into the machine, and the results should be walking up the school steps right about now.
Oh, here we go. The parade of celebrities.
First of all, they're all dressed in wedding attire, so apparently they've all met and matched, and they're decided to get married.
Which is weird, because the very first people in the procession are
Batman and Nancy.
Nancy.
From Ernie Bushmiller's comic strip, Nancy.
She's a child.
She's a child. Well, Batman does like him young.
I guess. So he's now going to marry Nancy. And Robin is carrying
Nancy's train.
And he says, holy matrimony, this is disgusting.
Well, yes, it is, because Nancy's a child.
Yes.
Batman could have gone for Aunt Fritzy Ritz back at home. She's buxom and pretty.
No, he's going to apparently marry a female child.
Nancy stole Fritzy's comic strip from her. I guess she could steal her man.
So then we have Ringo Starr and Sophia Loren.
Yes.
Behind
them. Okay, that wouldn't have been out of the realm of possibility, I shouldn't think.
And then who's behind that? Who's the guy?
I think it's supposed to be Frank Sinatra.
And is that Phyllis Diller?
Yes, for sure.
It's a really good rendering of Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, well, she's got a lot of... This was before her plastic surgery. She still had that nose.
And then Stanley and his monster.
Stanley and his monster, also a child, and also both male.
Yeah, Matthew Thief.
So, but luckily the monster says they can't get married because they're different religions.
Well, I just think this is incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, the Batman and Nancy. Like, first of all, DC doesn't even own Nancy.
Yeah, well, could you think he would have at least picked somebody... the artist would have picked somebody a little bit older.
Like Aunt Fritzy. It's right there. She's even mentioned. I used to love when Aunt Fritzy would appear in Nancy comics.
Like who's the witch?
Broomhilda?
No, the witch in... is it Bob? What's the other one?
Jerry Lewis.
Who's the witch? Witch Hazel.
Witchcraft. Yeah.
I would expect Witchcraft to be put with Batman. Because he's a Batman and she's a witch.
Or how about Anne Margaret?
Or Lois Lane.
Lois Lane!
Right?
Come on!
Not a child. All right, now we go back to Bob Hope
back
being
to
locked
the
in a loony bin.
Harvard has broken in disguised as a doctor. And
try to break him out.
He's going to break him out. Dr. Frutakaka is dining at his favorite club, unaware that Bob Hope has escaped. There's a bunch of British Adventurer Club members there, I'm assuming. or army generals or something.
And then some industrialists.
Well, they're playing a game of telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Frutakaka is explaining that his patient claimed that a 16-year-old boy named Rad invented a machine that makes eternal love matches.
Then the table next, the group next door says, "Did you hear that, BJ?"
This is not to be confused with BJ from last week. This is a B period J period.
An 8-year-old boy named Ray invented a lovely match that never dies. Our company, Sputtergood Matches, must have it.
Did you hear that, General? A 4-year-old boy has invented a death ray. Our country must have it.
Okay, so, meanwhile, Bob Hope is trying to get somewhere. He wants to go to Benedict Arnold High. So he has Harvard in his arm.
Because he's worried about how Tad got through the night alone. That's sweet. They're not even related by blood.
He should be worried.
Well, Bob's going to Benedict Arnold High in his loony bin outfit with Harvard. The children of the town are running wild in the streets because they've all been matched with inexplicable partners. I'm glad this didn't happen in my town. We didn't all race around the town riding on our 10 speeds. Come back, Angela, come back. We're matched. At the high school, now I don't know who this nurse is supposed to be. Some kind of Basil Wolverton.
She's Wolverton? Horrible.
Wolverton. Nurse who's...
She looks like one of my former coworkers.
She's being pursued by the mummy teacher. I can't remember what his name is. Anyway, Bob Hope finds not Tad, but Super Hip. I should have known you were behind this. Sorry, wait. I should have known you were behind this. I'm going to have to learn how to do Bob Hope. I'm going to keep doing this. Turning love upside down, driving Tad wacky, putting me in the booby hatch.
I should have known you were behind this. Turning love upside down, driving Tad wacky, putting me in a booby hatch. Not that I sound like Bob Hope's crossed with Katharine Hepburn.
Now, these army generals have flown over to the high school because they're going to try to find the gentleman who's created the death ray. A Super Hip turns into a jet to get away from Bob Hope and flies into the air, is fired upon...
By the Air Force.
By the Air Force. Of course, ordinary bullets don't hurt him because he can set his tail on fire and fly away.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the fire department is called. Super Hip then turns himself into a match because his hair is on fire, and the match company people think that it's the giant match that they think has been invented.
So they use water and put out the fire.
Yes. Then Super Hip turns into, well, he shoots off into the distance and turns into Tadwallader again. Who luckily
Tadwallader luckily lands on a trampoline.
And then on a hammock. And then just avoids being burned in a barbecue.
Yes.
Fantastic. Bob Hope finds him. They find each other. And say, good grief, what are you doing in your pajamas, they say to each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'd never believe it, even if I told you.
They say to each other. And much later.
Jumping ions, Henrietta is destroying the love machine.
You do her voice.
I'll tell you what, I've been sweating it for 10 hours without a sip of lubricating oil, and I'll keep it up until that mechanical matchmaker says I'm the one and only dreamboat for Super Hip.
That figures in a most disgusting fashion. Yes.
The end.
The end.
As I recall, Tad doesn't even know that he's Super Hip.
Oh my goodness.
I don't think he remembers. Like the Hulk.
Bob Hope knows.
Bob Hope knows because he saw him transform in one of these issues or other. Well, that's it. That's the end of the story.
My goodness.
Now
tell me about the art.
We'll turn back to page 23.
Okay.
We'll look at the top panel.
20.
It's in the little corner at the bottom of the page. It says the page
21, 22, 23.
Top panel.
Mm-hmm.
Does that strike your fancy as anything you've seen similar to before?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well,
tell me.
Well, it's Carmine Infantino.
Oh.
And that, I knew that he had drawn it after I started reading. I did my research. And then I saw, and he seemed like an unlikely choice to pencil this. But then that panel was like, oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because that's something The Flash would have
done. Yes. I can see that now.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's just interesting. It's neither here nor there.
That's good.
He will not be back next issue. Aww. But Bob Hope will be, and hopefully, my fingers crossed, Super Hip. This is my favorite character of all of literature. Really. You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your free podcast downloaded from. And you can find us right back here next week. Right. I don't know. I haven't looked at my spreadsheet today, but
yeah,
it'll be something good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Don't worry.
We'll bring it, right?
That's right. Bye.
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
We'll keep us sailing along.
High in the sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun. So everyone, come on.
Guide us. When you're beside me, we can fly.